Lisa Nepoli. I was a technology journalist in a former life. Then I was a business reporter, and now I am an author. So that's why Thomas asked me to be here, I think. That's why he asked me to be here. And I have the formidable challenge of having to interview five people with amazing stories and offerings. It's been really fun to prepare for this. You all can hear me? Okay, I can't get this micro. Good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a brief, quickie Q&A with each of these important, formidable people in this industry, and then have a final word, and then open it up to questions, because I'm sure you have many. But and I want to remind us all to keep going back to the sort of headline of why we're here: the future of enhanced book experiences, ebooks, apps, book trailers, and immersive storylines. There's so many threads and directions we can take from that, but let's stay on topic with the other rubric. Will the lessons learned from the collapse of the music industry revolutionize the publishing industry? Okay, so let's start with Dani Klein, and she's the creator of something called Afterbirth, Stories You Won't Read in a Parenting Magazine. One of those fantastic ideas that sums up so perfectly in that title, I don't even need to tell you what it is. But Afterbirth started as a show, and what Dani does is commission well-known actors and writers. They perform original, funny stories about how becoming a parent changed their lives unexpectedly and permanently. And then 2 years ago, it became a book from St. Martin's Press, great publisher. And now, Dani, you're taking it and enhancing it and making it a web series. Can you tell us why you're doing that and what you're doing to make that happen?
Right, sure. Thank you, Lisa. Sure. Thank you all. It's great to be here, everyone. Just thought I'd say that. Great to be here for my kids, because that's the whole point of the book. So right now, actually, we have kind of two arms going. And forgive me, I don't know a lot of the technology language, so I won't be using the right acronyms. But I come out of theater, but I think I'll be able to communicate my point. The show featured, what Lisa didn't say, is that each of these writers, actors, and comics also perform their own story on the show. So we had, over the last 7 years, about 100 recordings made of these performances, professionally made. So now we've launched the, on iTunes, the podcast. I can't believe I'm stuttering over that. That's embarrassing. So we have the podcast, and that is Afterbirth Stories on iTunes, and you can then obviously listen to them at your leisure. And the next arm is a web series. So to take each of these performances, capture them on video, kind of they run live between 8 and 10 minutes, but for the web we need them to be, you know, around 5 seems to be the attention span. And one thought we've had is to intercut them with animation. And at this point, we are securing branding. You know, we've met with all the major companies, and that's where we are right now.
But major companies?
Like brands like Ford and Clorox and
sponsors.
Fortune 500 people, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. And the intention behind that is not everyone can afford to pay a babysitter and go to a club and have the live experience, but this would really expand our audience and allow people who were at the end of the day home and just wanted to laugh and feel less isolated about their lives and be able to go on and hear these funny stories and see them perform. So have the experience of being in a club without actually having to pay a babysitter.
So you're building a community around parents.
Yes, absolutely.
And did you know when you were recording the performances all these years what you were going to do with it, or did you just think this might be a cool thing to document?
Right. Definitely not 7 years ago did we even think what a podcast was. Mm-hmm. I think originally we thought we might do an audiobook, and that did not happen. So now we have all this material, and it kind of develops as we go. But no, originally it was, you know, an idea.
And it's a fluid idea, too.
It's a fluid idea.
Static here in this book, but it's one of those ideas that could go on like a bridal magazine forever.
Yes, and it tours the country. We appear in New York, San Francisco, and Boston. I always use some Los Angeles people and local people. And then this year, I started a new show, which is called Not What I Signed Up For, and that's just about marriage. And that's so I could expand my audience even further to people who didn't have kids for whatever reason, or, you know, I was a little tired of the subject too, because it gets old. But You know, the idea that everyone has a partner and you don't, you just have to be with someone for 7 years and it has to be a person. It's not, these are not pet stories. They have to be like, you know, relationships with human beings, committed relationship for 7 years. And that's also really had a tremendous amount of success already in the, it, as a live stage show. And then we'll move it into, we're going to go to New York with it. And that's usually where we meet publishers. When we take the show to New York, that's where we meet the publishing community.
And you're, are you charging for this content? Is it all, is your intention to charge for it or will it be subsidized by?
Oh, right. It'll be subsidized by a sponsor, for sure. Because we have a really strong demo. You know, the young parent demo is, you know, a group that people really want to hit. So.
Diapers and sex toys you can sell to all of
them. I was going to say cars, but you could go with sex toys.
I don't have kids, so what do I know? Here, what you would sell?
You know about sex toys. Oh, folks. Okay.
I just have these great fantasies about what you do when you have a baby or so.
Yeah.
Okay, with that, let's move on to Charles Stack at the other end of the table, who is the CEO of a company called Sideways. And he had the foresight in 1992, even before there was such a thing as the World Wide Web, to launch an online bookstore. What a concept that was. And then when the web happened, it became books.com. And offline, I'd love to hear the story about your registering that name, much less selling it later. And he says, his daughter says, my daddy killed the bookstore, and now he's killing the book. Because at Sideways, I guess you bill yourself as the next chapter in storytelling, making apps that transform publications and other projects into intuitive and immersive experiences for the user. So what would you tell somebody like Danny or me with my Dead Tree Media book? What would you offer people like us?
That the audience for media is changing dramatically. To link back to my daughter's story, We were brought in when she was in third grade, and they said, we think your daughter is ADHD. And my wife immediately looked at me and said, it's his fault. Because had there been such a diagnosis, I clearly would have been diagnosed as that in my elementary school. But I think what we're seeing, just fascinating statistics. Kaufman did a study of kids in 7 to 17. And what they watched, and then they added up all the hours, and it was 4 hours of TV a day, and 2 hours of internet, 7 hours of sleeping, 6 hours of school. It added up to 30 hours. And so they went back and redid the math. And it's multitasking. I mean, it's, yes, kids are spending enormous amounts of time on TV and on the internet, but they're doing it all at the same time. So the ability to deliver stories through multiple channels simultaneously is one of the great untapped concepts, I think, for younger generation in particular and some of us older people that are ADD.
How are you doing?
That's just one observation I want to make that's gone unexploited by storytellers.
But so tell us a little bit, what's the elevator pitch of Sideways?
You want the commercial?
Yeah, do the quickie commercial.
So we're building a platform that allows anybody to drop multimedia elements into a set of scenes, preferring not to use the word chapters or directories, we're calling them scenes. So you can drop in audio, video, animation, 3D objects, graphics, text, anything you want to in a set of scenes, and then those scenes will tell a story either in a linear fashion or in a non-linear fashion.
But is it a plug-and-play sort of thing, like Danny would take this video that she's collected over these years and use a tool that you make, or you would deploy a human to work with her?
You didn't do your bio, so do you want to? You wrote a book about Bhutan.
Yeah, I wrote a book about Bhutan, and I collected a lot of video on my most recent trip to Bhutan.
Right. I know what that is, so
okay.
let me use that
Good.
As an example.
Okay.
So you could take your audio, your video, the actual text of the book
mm-hmm.
that you wrote, and put those into a new multimedia storyline that the user could read in a linear fashion, as you have written it, or in a nonlinear fashion using, for example, geography. So even though Bhutan may not be a good example because it's so small, but you could, for example, travel around the country and see where you wrote sections of the book and actually engage with the story in geographic fashion instead of a linear fashion. But that's one example. We recently did a book about David Roberts, who was a 19th century lithographer. And you can engage in that book in a geographic fashion by going up and down the Nile with him in 1838. Or you can engage in a chronological fashion. There's a calendar. And you can jump around and look at what he did on individual days. Or you can just read it front to back. And we've also done the same thing with nonfiction. So we published David Bush. We only do books by people named David, but we did a David Bush one on photography for the Canon Guide. And the book, as originally published in text, in print, was linear. But the app that we did is nonlinear in the sense that you can navigate any way you want to. You can look it up randomly. It links in and out of the web as part of the process. There's even a 3D model of the camera itself that you can navigate if you want to find out what the piece's parts do. So it's this non-linear, multi-channel navigation piece that our platform enables.
Can you talk a little bit about what you did with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Because that's a really interesting partnership, too.
And so the Rock Hall approach is about doing a book. They have all this content around the 600 songs that made rock and roll. And it was, as it came to us, text. And it's a couple of paragraphs on each of the 600 songs written by the curators at the Rock Hall. So it's, you know, fairly lofty and well thought out and really well written. And we thought, what could we do with that? So rather than just print the book and publish it in a linear fashion with pictures of the cover, we came up with this kind of quasi-jukebox approach. Well, there's actually multiple approaches, but one of which is a jukebox where you can dial up the decade, see the album covers like you would in a jukebox, mm-hmm. and then pick an album cover. And then, I think this is probably the more interesting part, is it links out to iTunes and provides you 60 to 90 second samples of virtually every single song in the 900, thank goodness for the Beatles deal, for the 600 songs in the collection. So you can read about the experience, look at the album covers as they progress through time, see the connections between artists and listen to the music. And then from a commercial standpoint, you can also buy the songs and there's an affiliate fee from that. So it kind of combined all sorts of elements into it's been a pretty big hit for the Rock Hall.
I can't wait to hear what Christopher Keneally of the Copyright Clearance Center has to say about all of that.
Well, we're dancing on the edge.
Yeah, well, you're sitting next to the expert, so he can help you out with that. Let me before we move on to that, that's a great example of really beautiful content that's really not easy to port over, but it's not like you have to scratch your head hard to... That must be fun. It must have been fun, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
It was a really fun project.
Yeah. So let's move just to Daniel Tibbetts right now. You are the SVP of Programming at GoTV Networks and Premier Digital Publishing, and you have a strong TV production background, and like me, you used to work at Fox, where I was an early internet age sacrificial lamb, but that's a whole other story too. And I wanted to ask what you're offering that's different than Sideways.com, because you are also porting content over to new media, but tell us a little bit about how you're doing that, especially when it comes to books.
Absolutely. So I'll just explain the different areas we work in because they're relevant, but I'll be brief. So first off, I run GoTV Studios, and it is a content creation studio based up in Sherman Oaks, and we create video content that airs today across all the carriers in the U.S. through broadband and even television. We also have an application development group under the GoTV Networks banner, which builds very rich enterprise applications for companies or for partners like NFL. We have the NFL Draft app that just came out last week, Sony's Crackle, and even Oprah. And those are, you know, very similar in that they're interactive apps, but primarily around video content. Mm-hmm. And looking at the marketplace a year or more ago, we really saw that the what was happening in the publishing space is exactly what was happening in the label, right, the music label area several years earlier, where the ability for people to just go direct for artists like Airhead to say, you know what, I don't want to be a part of my label anymore. I'm going to go ahead and talk to my fans, my tribe directly, and I'm going to control that process. Well, the authors and the agents needed a company to do that too. So we created Premier Digital Publishing as a service house for authors and agents to get their works to the existing platforms. And those are either just literally ported directly from a book format to the Kindle or the iBook or whatever the device is, or the ability to use our expertise in video production and application development to create more of an interactive experience. So, for example, we have in Premier Digital Publishing is an imprint, right? It's one of our imprints. Another group we have is based around faith content. So we were able to take Pastor Dudley Rugifers, who's the pastor at Porter Ranch, his devotional, and put him in front of it so that as you're reading the book, between each chapter, you can hear from him directly on what was he thinking when he wrote this chapter, how is it working, what should you think about, what should you know, and then tie it up at the end. So in that particular example, it just, again, adds an extra element, a layer. And we service all that from beginning to end, right? Because at the end of the day, agents and managers have to focus on what they do best, making great deals. What we focus on is making sure that that product gets everywhere it needs to go, in the right format, in the right way, in the right experience, and let the author do what they do best is write.
So you are primarily working with established media companies so far, or could somebody like Danny and I come to you with a book, or how does... You're doing it. You're getting people any way they can,
Yes. Well, we absolutely on the author side, we have focused on tier one and tier two authors. We're working with like Piers Anthony, right, who is very well known in the sci-fi arena. He's the number two most searched fantasy author on Amazon. So he's someone we work with today. And again, he is a machine. He writes. We work with his backlist, right? So bio of a space tyrant. I don't know if anyone here has heard of that. It was a series that was popular in the 70s, early 80s. Hasn't been in print for years. Hmm. We were able to bring that back, first time in digital, and it sells. And it sells great. Matter of fact, what's great about a series business is obviously you see the first one, and then you see the trail of all of them. So we have six books there. We were also able to launch new books from Piers Anthony. Matter of fact, we've launched now three new books direct to digital first. Why? Because he sees that the value in going directly to digital and to that audience is very relevant for him. And also from the economics. We provide a much better economic back to him than a traditional publisher. So it really does work from that standpoint so that he can do what he does best and then we deliver him to the audience. And then from a marketing standpoint, and that's the other element, Piers Anthony has a fan base, but he's not out there, right? He's not tweeting, he's not blogging, he doesn't use one of these. So we work with him. We're not writing those. There's no ghostwriter in the back room pretending to be Piers Anthony. He creates a list of messages that he wants to talk to his fan base, and we make sure that those get out to that community. So the value is having an author that has a community, because if you can talk to that community in new ways, you're going to sell books. Now, and if you guys came to me, I would ask those questions. Backlist, new works, and who's your audience, and how are we going to go get them? When I work with Odyssey Networks, Odyssey Networks is the largest faith brand, coalition of media in the world. They can reach 120 million people. So how can I work with them to get their message, their content, their books, right, their video, out to that community so that whoever wants it can access it, and also we're talking to them constantly. So that's the services we provide.
Gotcha. And that's a great segue into Nina Lassam.
Lassam. Yeah.
And sorry, I didn't check that before we started. You are the marketing evangelist at Wattpad.
Yes.
And that you call yourselves the YouTube for ebooks. So you're dealing with different people than, say, Sideways and GoTV. Yeah. You're dealing with somebody right out of the gate who's sitting at home, right, maybe perhaps a new mother who's writing stories and wants to figure out how to get them out there. Can you explain how Wattpad works?
Yeah, well, it is a lot of user-generated content, absolutely, but we also work a lot with publishers. So like YouTube, there's a big range of professional content as well as user-generated content. So we work mostly and see the popularity in the same genres that you see very popular in the publishing world. So 2 years ago, it was definitely a vampire space. We've moved away from that towards more historical fiction, steampunk. Salem Witch Trials is a burgeoning trend as well on our space that we see a lot of action on. So we break down to about 20% content creators and 80% content consumption. But more than a place for content consumption, and speaks a lot to what you were just addressing, is that it's a place to interact directly with the authors. So we see a comment on a story on Wattpad once every second. So these readers are extremely interested in learning the behind-the-scenes lives of these authors and what is creating the stories behind what they're just reading. So there's chat and commenting and all the things that you would expect to see in sort of an interactive space.
So you have, I read about something you wrote or on your site, Abigail Gibbs. She has an uncompleted novel that's been read 7.2 million times already?
Yeah, so that, again, the YouTube comparison is helpful for that as well, because a lot of these writers, both professional and, you know, Abigail Gibbs is 17, so she's not professional. But yes, her story's been read almost 10 million times now, and it's just something she's been working on for a few years. And I think the key to creating these audiences is creating dynamic content. I think we think of text, especially with traditional publishing, as a very static thing. But if you syndicate it, which is what we often do, so it'll be a chapter a week, two chapters a week, you create the experience of that you get in television watching as well, or serials, either in movies or books as well.
So how does anybody make any money? How does Abigail make any money? Or is she just there hoping that Random House comes along and goes, you're the next big thing?
Right. Well, that's, a lot of the people on Wattpad do get picked up by agents and publishers and get book deals, absolutely. But for her, I don't think that's what it's about. I mean, she's in grade 11 or something, so I don't think that's what she's after. For, you know, as the self-publishing space has opened up, we work with this sort of semi-professional sphere of authors as well, and definitely that would be their goal. For the traditional publishers, when we work with the big six or the smaller independent presses, for them it's a marketing tool. So we're mostly in the app space. Our app is downloaded about a million times a month, and we try to be as platform agnostic as possible. So definitely the Android, the Apple is the big space, but we also have the touch site and Java and Windows. I probably shouldn't say that. Allowing people to access the stories from their iPads in the morning and then with their friends' Blackberries at lunch and then on the school computer in the afternoon and then at home on, you know, their Apple TV is something that's really important, I think.
So people, same way people go to YouTube to look for crazy videos about fill-in-the-blank weirdness,
yeah,
they go to your site to look for
absolutely
great stories about
whatever,
like you said, vampires
they're interested.
Or,
yeah.
And so a couple of years ago, before Dani had her book, while she was sort of developing the show, she could have gone and put both text, and now she can put video on your site.
Absolutely.
And
video
sort of have a
and
test.
Audio. And the other thing is, for someone mentioned, I think it was you as well, actually, that authors can be reluctant to do some of the social media side. They really want to focus on their writing. And using communities like Wattpad sort of takes some of the burden off, because there is user-generated content created in response to user-generated content. So people will create art and videos and songs and whatever, fan fiction, that relate to the story. So there becomes more multimedia worlds that are created, not under the direction of the author, but it creates a more dynamic experience for the reader.
I'm dying to hear what Christopher Keneally, the copyright expert, thinks about this, because my thought would be, uh-oh, I'm putting my fabulous hard work online. What happens to it? Who owns it? And, I mean, maybe you can both talk about that, and then Christopher can tell us more about the issues that are raised. I mean, I assume I didn't go as far in the process to sign up. But
I mean, you can choose whichever copyright you want. Definitely the publishers choose 100% copyright. There's no Creative Commons or anything like that. They own the copyright to it. So we have a lot of measures in place. We have metadata to prevent copyright material being posted onto our site. That's very important, obviously, for publishers. But also, you cannot download the content. You cannot forward the content. You cannot copy and paste the content. So it would take someone who's quite savvy to get the content off of the apps as well as the website.
And one more quick question. You're making money from the publishers. That's how you're...
Well, that's an advertising... Yeah, it falls under the sphere of advertising.
So when publishers use your site to promote new writers, they're paying for...
Yeah, I mean, it's a case-by-case basis.
Are you making money yet?
Yeah, no. Yeah, we're profitable.
Lisa, you're making tents.
Sorry, I covered technology during the dot-com run-up, and nobody was making any money,
no,
they went public, too.
I just want a follow-up question to that, because I'm interested, right? So this is
sure
a service I would want to use. Is it advertising from... if I put a book, I put Piers Anthony up there, mm-hmm, right? I work with you on Piers Anthony. Am I then paying to promote Piers Anthony so I can
good
drive
question
people to that destination?
No. Well, I mean, it would be valuable for you to do that through the channels that he already has existing, mm-hmm, whatever they may be, the blog, the Twitter, whatever you've put into place. But to put the content onto the site is free to anyone. You wouldn't have to work with us at all. But over 100,000 stories are uploaded each month, so it would be in the better interest to work with us to
but
get...
To pay to get deck placement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if Danny put her stories up there or somehow diaper ads coming into the stories, is that...
So you mean product placement?
Yeah, or just product. Like on Facebook, I get Botox ads
right.
all the time. They know how old I am. Is it the same sort of thing?
It's targeted.
Gotcha.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so that kind of advertising exists. Sorry, Christopher. Okay, so I would imagine you're freaking out hearing about all this because all of these people can be your clients and listen to your fantastic podcasts where you advise about the copyright issues. And you told me before we were here today that this is a copyright minefield, this new world that we're in.
Well, right. And first of all, thanks for that great build-up, Lisa. Now everybody's waiting for me to solve all
these
problems.
You're a genius. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting for me to listen to this. First of all, what I hear about are all these new approaches to content, very much 2011, but the problems that Lisa's getting at around copyright are really very old problems. And when I was thinking about the presentation today, and I like the word transmedia a lot, because it's a new word for something that's not so new. You hear other terms, in fact, it's on the title, enhanced books. I'm not really crazy about enhanced books. That sounds like a bit of a put-on, really. You know, when you get something that's been enhanced, you know that it's not quite as good as it should be. If you hear the French talk about this, they talk about enriched books, livres enrichis, something that's enriched sounds to me like something the doctor tells you is good for you to eat. But transmedia gives you an impression of an approach that really is across media, almost media neutral. And today in the environment we live, that's what we're talking about when it comes to copyright. All media is copyrighted immediately. There was a day, you know, back in the dark ages when you actually had to register your work with the Copyright Office, send in a form, send in a copy. Today, it's immediately copyrighted from the time you create it. So any recording anyone is making of this particular program, any photograph you take on your iPhone, any video you use with a flip camera, whatever, that's all copyrighted to you. So everybody in this room is a copyright holder. And that's a very different situation than would have been true even 20 years ago or 25 years ago, when the only copyright holders were really, you know, big outfits, but people that had plants, you know, the newspaper plant, the film studio. So to your point, everyone who is contributing to these various kinds of new approaches to book publishing are all copyright holders and should be concerned about it.
The other day I saw Tina Fey here in Los Angeles, if anybody was there, and she was talking about how the Sarah Palin bits were downloaded something like 58 million times. And she said in passing, you know, I never got paid a dime for any of that. So, I mean, we're all familiar.
Well, you know, and it's funny, you know, you talk about IT and nobody's making any business in this right now. Well, if you talk to the book publishers, they'll tell you there's a joke that's going around Manhattan, and it goes like this. What did the bookstore clerk say to the customer? You're supposed to say, I don't know, Chris.
I don't know. What?
What the bleep are you doing here? Okay. The point is that there's not a lot of money right now in the book publishing business either, or it's going out of it. So I think you need to be concerned. In the case of Tina Fey, she may be deciding that free is a good price. And that's certainly an option people can have. Stuart Brand said, information wants to be free. He continued, information wants to be expensive. It's a choice.
How would you tell any of the people here, especially Charles with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, how to proceed? Do you come in with on a project by project the way Charles did and say, okay, this is a minefield or this is a lot or we're going to have to be clearing all? How does that work?
Well, I mean, that's a very loaded question. I mean, I think in terms of the kind of consumer app that you offer where people can drop in content, they really should be aware that if it's their own original content, they have the right to that. If they're starting to use content from outside and people think, oh, it's on the web, I can use that. This is not true. Anything that's on the web has its own copyright unless somebody expressly has put it into either Creative Commons license, which you may be familiar with, and that's a very limited license that doesn't allow for commercial reuse, or they expressly put it into the public domain, and that requires, you know, an express written form. So anybody using content that's not something they shot themselves, recorded themselves, or wrote themselves is potentially infringing.
I'll ask you the question I used to ask during the advent of Napster all the time. I mean, those of us who are of a certain age understand maybe that I shouldn't take Danny's book and go, this is mine, or, you know, copy it freely. How do you explain this to somebody who's 12 right now, who doesn't get that everything isn't a free-for-all and usable everywhere?
Well, that's obviously a very hard point. I mean, our company, Copyright Clearance Center, does a lot of education. We're not copyright cops. We're not going to be going after anybody like the RIAA or anybody else. What we believe is that, in a sense, virtue can be a business model, right? But for it to be successful, it has to be efficient, it has to be simple, the pricing has to be done right. And what we're thinking about very seriously is how we take our experience from the text world and begin to think in this transmedia way, that copyrighted material, we don't care where it winds up, if it winds up on your laptop, if it winds up on your smartphone, wherever it is, we want to be there to help the person reuse it. So we have begun to develop ways for, through apps, people to share and reuse that content and monetize that content. We're also thinking about ways that we can add to our catalog so it can include things like film clips, video, and so forth. So we want to enable it. You know, I don't think it's simply enough to say, oh, you can't use that. There has to be a way for it to be used. Otherwise, you get to that point, as you say, with the music experience, you know, Napster versus RIAA, and we know who won.
So, and you cover all of these issues on an ongoing basis on beyondthebook.com, right? On a podcast,
a blog. That's a podcast series that's part of copyright.com, mm-hmm. Yes.
Are those copyrighted? Can I take them and just sort of...
They are copyrighted. Copyright Clearance Center, it's a great question, but we make them available to everybody for free. Obviously, the other way that you can sort of, you know, think about protecting your work is informing people when you post things online how they can find you. It's remarkable to me how many times people are creating content, putting it on the web, doing things with it, and never telling anybody how to find them if somebody wants to reuse it. Always put the copyright symbol and your name and some way to get to you. That's the greatest way to protect your content right now.
And intellectual property law is still a probably booming career more than ever, I would think, because of all of that, because somebody's got a handle.
Absolutely. Well, lawyers are, that's always a good profession, I think, yeah. Unfortunately.
No offense. Okay, let me have you each wrap up with a simple answer, a brief answer to the overarching question that brought us here today, and then I'll open things up to the audience, because I think we're running out of time. We're okay. If you guys, why don't we start with you? What is the future of publishing? From your, you know, what's the future? I hate crystal ball stuff.
You can't start with me.
I know, because you, what's your future? Speak about yourself.
Creating a much larger audience that can access the material with greater ease than currently the book and the show are available. So creating community. Ultimately, I'd like to have interaction within the community. I'd like to have lay people, for lack of a better word, be able to submit their stories, mm-hmm. to share with each other. You know, the biggest adjustment to becoming a parent is isolation. And the wonderful aspect of the web is being able to feel, to not leave your house and yet feel a part of something. And I think particularly the parenting community, it serves a tremendous service. So to be able to have that, and particularly with my work, it's equally male. It's not a mommy situation. There's plenty of mommy mm-hmm. blogs and mommy outlets. But what my work features just as many men, Matthew Weiner, who created Mad Men, and Andrew McCarthy, and Peter Horton, and Dana Gould, and all of these very funny parents who are able to have a venue for, you know, to express themselves, and then they encourage other people to express themselves. So, you know, I'm not talking about a mommy community, so that's another really important feature. But, you know, and ultimately there would be more books. As I said, the next one is going to be about marriage. And then the next area that I'm very interested in is seniors, like our parents, mm-hmm. who, and that, the truth about that. So, you know, I'm all about the truth. So more opportunity to express the truth from your living room, I guess, would be my genius.
And 30 years ago, you might have been doing a magazine. So here you are just doing multi-platform.
Yeah. Right.
Daniel. Yeah.
Well, I think it's already here. I mean, I think we're already talking about it, and it's already relevant because this is all my music that I'll, more than I'll ever be able to listen to, all my video more than I can watch, all my books more than I can read, and this is just one device. This is a Kindle, right? Because it's software, and it's an iPad, and it's all those things. So, from what is the future? I think it's here, and as everyone in this room eventually has some device, maybe not this one. That's the reality, and so it really becomes about recommendation, right? Recommendation engines are going to be critical in what's specific to you, what's important, but even beyond just what's hot, it's, you know, what's relevant to your life, period. And so all those elements are going to come into play about media, and book publishing is obviously a huge part of that, but it is book publishing, it is video, and it is audio and how they come together.
Do you talk macro every day at work, or are you just focused on the clients you've got at hand and getting new business? What's the?
It's a lot of macro. Where is the industry going? We, from a GoTV perspective, have been doing this a long time. First, actually, in the mobile space, and so we always have to be looking at what's the evolution of the marketplace. From a micro standpoint, absolutely, it's really educating. From a B2B standpoint and a B2C standpoint of what's now available. And I think that's the biggest hurdle, right? We've gone past the challenges of content creation. Anybody can create now. We've gone past the challenges of distribution because distribution's communal. Everybody can do it. It's awareness. How do I tell people I'm there? And then how do I keep them engaged once I've gotten a hold of them? And those are the two points that everyone needs to focus on because those are the next barriers.
I hate this crystal ball question, but it's just a good way to get you to sum up what's going on at Wattpad, what you see the future, the immediate future as?
I think, and appropriately probably for today, that the future of publishing is transmedia. I think, as you just said, that content creation, there's no lower barrier to entry than text. So we're going to see text everywhere and always, and it's extremely platform agnostic. So taking these textual stories and taking the basic story in its most rudimentary sense and sending it out, whether that's enhanced apps or gamification or movies or web series or whatever sort of transmedia elements you want to incorporate, I think is what we'll see where the profit really lies.
Christopher.
The future of publishing. I attend a lot of conferences about the future of publishing, and I have begun to think that if there is a future for publishing, it's conferences about the future of publishing.
You're onto it then.
and I say that, you know, I'm optimistic. I force myself to be optimistic. That's a difficult thing for me to do. I'm an Irishman, so it's hard, but I try to be optimistic. I believe that the innovation that's taking place today is tremendously exciting. I said at the beginning that transmedia is a new word for something very not so new. I was a freelance journalist for many years. I worked in print, in radio, in television. I started writing for the web in 1995 when it arrived. So I think that writers, actors, lots of people have always been working in transmedia environments, so I don't know that that's all that new. But here's something I will say, sort of counter to this panel on enhanced media. If anybody tells you the book is dead, they're wrong. I think the book is very much alive. And the book has all the aspects of what we consider to be new media. It's an old media with new media. It's got a search engine, right? There's an index in the back of the book. It's non-linear. You can read any chapter you want in any order you want. Don't tell them you can't. It's multi-channel because it's got illustrations. It's got a smell. It's got design aspects to it that are terrific. So I think that the future of publishing will be a publishing community that sees content without looking at the container first, but then recognizes that once they have the right content, they need to put it into the right container.
Without going through all the excellent points, I just want to add a new one, which is one of the big new opportunities in the last decade has been the opportunity to reconnect the storyteller to their audience. And if you look at distribution channels over time, you know, Homer sat around and told the story, and I guarantee you at the end of that story, people told them what they thought, and mm-hmm. they talked about it, and there was a lot of interaction. And I could also guarantee you that the Iliad changed over time as he got that feedback. Maybe even changed while he was telling it. So that opportunity to connect the storyteller to their audience is one that we've yet to really leverage. I know people have done social media, but I'm fascinated really by that opportunity.
Can I just say, though, I don't think Homer ever did any focus groups, because there was no way to have the Trojans not lose that.
Yeah.
If there had been enough people around, though, there right. might. I know I said I'd open up to questions, but I have one particularly for Charles. Do you think that there's going to be a day, or any of you, when publishers, when I signed the deal to write Radio Shangri-La, I didn't know that they would hire me to do the audio version of the book. I didn't know for sure that they would do a digital version of the book. Is there going to be a day, do you think, where traditional publishers, if there is such a thing, go, okay, this is great, Bhutan, there's all this video, because they didn't even put a picture in this Dead Tree Media version of my book. So if I'd sold it 5 years from now, would there be a whole alliance with a company like one of yours?
Well, I think the way I view the space is this giant open field simultaneously being converged upon by the film industry, the game industry, the book publishing industry, the magazine industry, all rushing to this fog-shrouded Central Valley. And I don't think we know what's there, but I know it's going to involve more than a single form of media.
Can I make a point about that? As an author, I'm asking people this question, and they're not giving me a very clear answer. What is a book proposal in 2011?
Yeah.
It's a lot of social media. It involves a lot of referencing
social media, but it's not
how you're going to promote it yourself as an author. That's a whole entire section of your book proposal now has to be your foundation and your base and your platforms and your multiple platforms. And one of the selling points of my book was that it was a show that toured the country.
Yeah, I bet it was.
And that we had 500 people showing up at San Francisco and 400 in Boston and...
That's a great point, but I think it's also not just a book, even in your case. It's not just a book.
Right.
And so if you went to, if you found a literary agent and went to a publisher and just talked about the book, I would hope they'd turn it back to you and say, well, tell me more.
Yeah. Yep. Somewhat.
Where would Salinger be today if he started out? That reclusive...
I'll just give you one real-world example. We're working with an author right now who... literally is republishing his grandfather's book that was published 50 years ago. It was a very relevant, very popular book. And it's, I think, more relevant today. But we're not just taking the book and republishing it, right? It's not a backlist. We are working on making sure it's updated, but also there's a ton of video, audio, interactive. And I'm not building an interactive app around it. I'm just building all the marketing material that goes with it so that any consumer that enjoys that book, either a new consumer or somebody who read it years ago, now can experience a whole new set of entertaining elements around it. They don't have to look at any of it. They could just read the book, but it's there if they want it.
It's great.
And I think it's also important to think about the type of audience that you want to have when you're pitching a book. I think it's more than putting out promoted Google ads and attracting 30,000 people to your Facebook page who might never visit it again. It's important that the fans that you have are social media influencers, because a fan is not useful to you if it's not doing anything.
Right. That's an excellent point. All excellent points.